Michael Graham, New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. This is a pretty cool one. Not that what Michael usually has in his media outlet is not cool, but this is a cool one on the SBA in New Hampshire yesterday, recognizing a bunch of businesses, really looking at our local economy and recognizing a lot of businesses, and we'll talk about them in a moment, for being good small businesses. Michael, good morning.
All these high-tech stuff, I can't handle it, you know, these super high-tech things.
Well,
my apologies.
Michael Graham, New Hampshire Journal. Talk about some small business stuff.
I know, Jack, normally our stuff is pretty lousy, so we stumbled into something good, so thank you for your kind words today. So we have two pieces at nhjournal.com, which you can have in your new email box every morning if you sign up for a free newsletter. One is about the winners at the New Hampshire Small Business Association Awards yesterday. And also, who was on hand? The other story is about the economic climate. SBA Director Isabel Guzman was there herself, representing the Biden administration. Senators Hassan and Shaheen were there. And they were, particularly the Biden administration person was touting how great the economy is. She was saying that small businesses are feeling good and that they're optimistic about the future. Well, I asked Administrator Guzman about, as you pointed out, Jack, 70% of Americans say Joe Biden's not handling the economy very well. You know the National Federation of Independent Businesses, right? They do a survey every month. Optimism among small businesses at a 12-year low. And so I asked, and she said, I know, they're feeling good, it's all good. So we asked some other business people, like a Manchester restaurant owner, Desmond Holman, if the economy's doing good. He said, quote, hell no. We even asked some of the award winners who were there. And, they wanted to be nice, Jack, because, you know, they're surrounded by Democrats and they're receiving an award from the SBA. But Ken Witten, who owns Apparel Impact in Hooksett, he and his son won the Veterans-Owned Small Business of the Year Award.
I saw that. Yep.
I asked him about it. You know how it is, Jack, when you ask people a question and they want to give you the honest answer, but they don't want to say it? So, we need some economic intelligence. We don't seem to have that with the current leadership, he said, of the Biden administration. And so it is really interesting to see this divide. Senator Jean Chee, when I asked her, she was not foolish enough to say things are great. Instead, she said that's why we need to spend more money on the Small Business Administration. And I asked her why, you know, the optimism number was so low after 3 years of Biden policies that she supported. And Senator Shaheen said, you'll have to ask the business owners. Okay.
What was your answer?
You'll have to ask the business owners.
Oh.
Wait. Well. Oh. Okay. So that's your answer.
You realize
for 3 years you've been spending tons of money, and everybody's unhappy. And your answer is, well, just go ask them why they're unhappy.
You know, there's a lot of great small businesses that are recognized here in your article. People can reference this. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. Bunnies and Chocolate win big at New Hampshire NHSBA Awards. But there's a bunch of other businesses mentioned. But, Michael, the day that the SBA is here doing these recognitions, a day or two, was it just Monday, CNN poll comes out, CNN, not Fox, 70% of all Americans, 70% of Americans feel the economy is in poor shape.
And not only that, Jack, but literally the day that they were there yesterday, we find out that labor costs rose 25% faster than expected in the first quarter. And, of course, the first quarter, we only grew at 1.6%. The economists were expecting more than 2% growth. And so, look, I mean, you can say it's the world, it's global, blah, blah, or you can blame Joe Biden. Your politics are one issue. The other one is it's very hard to say that this economy is good, and in particular, if you are a middle class or working class person, it's tougher. And watching gas prices is funny, Jack. When I talk to my DC friends about what things are looking like in November, the thing that always comes up in the first three sentences is gas prices. Mm-hmm. If this trend continues, and we're at $4 and gas starts with a 4 in November, it's going to be very bad for Joe Biden. Now, Jack, I want to ask you about something.
Yes, Michael.
You followed politics in New Hampshire for a long time.
A few minutes.
You got this huge.
I've been doing this a few minutes.
You've been doing a lot. You're the senior statesman journalism in New Hampshire.
I'd go to Kevin Lander again. No, I'm not. No, I'm not that old. No, Michael, stop. They're older than me, but go ahead.
So you were interviewing Franklin Pierce back in the day. No, but seriously, so we have this huge, you know, campus issue. It's come to UNH, although the good news is there's been no violence or disorder, just, you know, some anti-Semitism. And the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, goes to Columbia. There are legislators in Congress who are saying we want to withhold money from these people. And yet, other than Chris Pappas, who did, he was one of 21 Democrats who signed on to a letter telling Columbia trustees, either fix this or quit. Everyone else, Representative Custer, the Democrats running for Congress, Becky Whitley, Colin Van Ostern, the governor candidates, all the Democrats are, Republicans love talking about this, Jack. They love denouncing the anti-Semitism and condemning the taking over of buildings. Why do you think Granite State Democrats are so quiet?
Because part of their own base that they need to survive politically are anti-Semitic supporters. So the far-left progressive side of the Democrat Party is anti-Semitic. And these, you know, Shaheen, Custer, they know it, and Hassett know it. Pappas, Chris Pappas, to his credit, seems to have a better political compass than his colleagues, because he always, once in a while, more than once in a while, he actually breaks away and has some common sense. But the others don't have the, I don't want to say this because I like some of these people and I respect them, and I mean that. I've known the Shaheens a long time, and I have a great relationship on the show with Senator Shaheen. I respect what she's done. I mean, who wouldn't? She's governor, U.S. senator, former state senator. She's been around this, but sometimes they don't have the you-know-what, and I saw it when the DNC was taking away our primary. They don't have, at the moment it's happening, they're afraid to stand up and say, you know what, the left side of our party's gone too far, and there's no place for being anti-Semitic in the United States of America, period, end of story. And they just are afraid that they're going to upset that far, progressive, energetic, you know, the squad. They're afraid the squad's going to come after them.
Well, I've got a quote for you from Annie Custer that will be in an NH Journal piece later today. Sign up for the newsletter. She says, quote, Democrats have been kind of holding back on weighing in on the protests, quote, it's a complicated enough for us with the range of emotions we have without weighing in on what colleges should be doing. So that's your congresswoman in the 2nd District, Annie Custer. We're too emotional to weigh in. We're holding back. We don't know what to say.
All right, thank you,
Republicans,
Mike.
Know what to say. Yep. That's interesting. It's just an interesting divide.
All right, thank you, Michael Graham, NHJournal.com. Thank you, Michael. I love this title, Bob Jackman, LaValle Middleton University Director. How smart is this company? What a wonderful locally owned and operated company across our listening region. Of course, if you go by and you're looking for that weekend warrior job, or to do over a major job in your house, or put in a garage, or, you know, even get a new roof, you can go talk to their experts. And Bob Jackman today wants to talk about you, the consumer, being educated. Good morning, Mr. Bob.
Good morning, Jack. And you're right, we are switching gears completely, and we always say a kind of a colloquialism is that if you want to get people's attention, hit them in their wallet.
Yeah. All right, take it away.
So what happens is, in this day and age when money is expensive, if you're going to borrow, and if you've got it, it would be nice to keep most of it. So what we're telling people is that you need to understand what your options are. And you said it in a very simple sentence, we want you to be an educated consumer. And by that, I do not mean going on the internet and listening or looking at four different sources, which are probably all telling you the same thing. You need to be asking questions. You need to be talking to people who are professionals in the industry. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about your home, who are the home professionals?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just makes. Yep. Go ahead.
And you know, there, you know what I've noticed, because my smarter, prettier, better half has been in the design, kitchen, bath, design, you know, business in a long time, and she works with some wonderfully talented home builders. I'll just mention a few: Andrew Guyton out there in the Seacoast, Sean Peters, and these. But she's explained to me the expertise level that some of these home builders and remodelers and installers have. And no offense, a lot of them are different. Like, some expertise on windows, there's just some people that know just about everything about windows and sliders for your home. And then there are some that know a lot about, like, the different granites and stuff for your kitchen. And then there are some that are really, really good at siding. So there's so many experts out there. and you really got to tap that individual expertise, if you follow me.
That's exactly right. And you got to know, you know, we always tell people, get two or three quotes for a project you're going to do. And one of the things that differentiates us from our competition is that we're project-oriented. We want to see your project succeed. When you're talking windows, we're talking windows with all the trim that's necessary, all the installation products, so that you don't wind up like my brother with a brand new home with the windows on the gable end leaking water.
What's that again?
Again, first-hand experience.
No, your brother's story.
He had windows put in his log home,
yep.
Brand new log home,
yep.
And they're leaking water in a driving rainstorm.
Wow.
And they're just not flash bright.
Yeah, yeah.
So the installation.
Wait a minute. I gotta talk about this brotherly thing for a minute. Are you a typical brother, and do you give him a hard time and say, don't you know I'm Bob Jackman and I could have helped you?
Negative.
No brother rivalry there?
Well, I come from a family of six, and we learned quite young that the quickest way to get into a battle with one of your siblings is to tell them you're right and they're wrong.
Uh-oh, watch out. All right, but, you know, yeah. I think, you know, educating the consumer, you made a point. We all make this, it's inevitable today, Bob, let's face it, this thing called Google. We all have these phones and we'll search for anything. And sometimes there's diminishing returns because I personally think it's better to go into one of your locations. And it happened to me once because I needed to do stuff on my back porch, and I went into one of your folks in Hampton. And the guy was so knowledgeable. He listened to me. I'm not the best at this, but I'm not the worst. And he said, you know what? Let me take you out back to our lumber yard. I think I have a solution for you. I'd rather go in and ask an expert in person than sit there searching and not knowing if all the information I'm getting is really, and can I do it myself without that expertise? You know, going to an expert. It's like you don't operate on yourself, right? You don't take out your own appendix, right?
I think they have a TV commercial about that.
Yeah. So,
but you're absolutely right. Yeah, and you got to ask questions, and you got to a question is a great thing. Because we need to know what your needs are. And that word needs is very important. And in a lot of cases, it's not what you're asking for. Your need is different than what you perceive your problem to be. And then you need to know what our abilities are. And when you're in person, whether it's over the phone, and I still consider that in person, or in one of the locations talking to someone, they can show you what they're talking about. They can show you that flashing that's going to prevent the window from leaking. They can show you why one window is better than another window or different than another window. It may be better for some people and not for you. So the lowest price, unfortunately, the Internet has taught us, you know, we can buy everything for the lowest price from Amazon. Well, baloney.
Yeah.
Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, and you know what I've noticed in our segments, Bob Jackman, I love the title, I'm sorry, LaValle Middleton University Director, with no agitators on campus, by the way. But here's my point, Bob. Over the time, whether we've talked about backyard, what I'd call, but they're getting much better, they're almost like tiny homes, sheds, roofing, modular project, renovation, windows, doors, all the stuff that you folks do, there's someone at LaValle Middleton you can go talk to about that. Even if they're not doing the job themselves, even if they're not doing the roof themselves, they can give you, to make you an educated consumer, tips about redoing your roof and maybe even point you in the right direction, right?
That's absolutely right. And our homes today are made up of systems. Everything is a system. A roof is a perfect example. There's about five different products that go into that project of roofing. And if any one of them is left out or not used correctly, then your project is going to fail. And that's what we want to avoid at all costs. Our goal is to make you successful. And to do that, you need to know about your options.
Yeah. Well, and again, don't be, because I did this, don't be, what's the word, Bob? Reluctant, reticent to go into one of your locations on a fishing mission, if you know what I mean, just to go talk to someone if you're not sure, versus ordering something online that you may have to go down to that local store to return, spend a lot of money, lose some money, or get the wrong purchase, right?
Well, this is where stereotypically women have an advantage over men, because women stereotypically will ask the question
right.
they need answered.
Right.
Whereas men will think that they should probably know the answer.
Venus and Mars, Venus and Mars. All right, Bob, appreciate it. University director, do I have to call you professor?
Well, I know one gentleman who does. I won't say no, but it's basically the position was created for staff development within our organization.
No, it's a smart.
We grow so much.
It's a smart company.
We have opportunities.
It's a smart company. By the way, employment opportunities, check them out. They're always looking for good team members, right?
Absolutely.
And, Bob, do you mind, because you and I have a relationship outside in terms of emails and back and forth communications, can you just send me your brother's contact with the log home? Because I want to call him and ask him and say, your brother was busting your chops for not asking him for help on those leaky windows.
No, I'm not that stupid.
Thanks, Bob. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
We check in with our friends at Manchester VA, and Julie Vos is the acting director right now of the entire facility, and she joins us with an update from the Manchester VA, which is, of course, beyond the main building there and their facilities and services around our region, with a new senior member. Take it away, Julie.
Good morning, Jack. Thanks for having us. Yes, so we are very pleased to have onboarded our new Deputy Chief of Staff, Dr. Basava Vallabhanini. She is here today. She has been with us for a short time, a couple of months now, and is already met many of our teams and started to help us and with our leadership team and our way forward. So I'll turn the mic over to Dr. Vallabhanini. She can introduce herself.
Hey, doctor. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Julie. Good morning, Jack. Thank you for having me on the show today. I'm Basava Vallabhanini, and I'm an internist. I have about 24 years of experience working with patients and providing high-quality care. I come from outside the VA system. However, my first exposure to a patient care in U.S. was at a VA hospital 23 years ago, and I've always wanted to come back and serve our veterans. So here I am today, and I'm excited to be the Deputy Chief of Staff at VA Manchester.
Well, that's pretty cool. Tell us a little bit more about your medical, you know, your background, what your mission there will entail, Doctor.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that. So I'm an internist, so I was a hospitalist for almost 20 years. Today now, I actually at Manchester provide care in our urgent care, and I see patients from 8 to 4:30 p.m. Once a week. And we are also working with our primary care team to come up with a post-discharge clinic. Some of our veterans that are being admitted in outside hospitals or even in other out-of-state, sometimes they may not get a post-discharge follow-up appointment quickly. So my goal is to try to kind of create a process so they can be seen within 3 to 5 days. So soon to come, this is one of our new initiatives, so we can provide timely care, high-quality post-discharge med reconciliation, and making sure that there is as less errors as possible, especially, you know, once they're discharged, sometimes there's confusion. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed mm-hmm. to follow up? Mm-hmm. So we want to be able to provide that reassurance and follow-up treatment plans.
And, Doctor, what about your new mission as deputy? What drew you to the VA versus, say, you know, other medical facilities, private, and things like that?
Yes, thank you again for that question, too. So in addition to being a clinician, I actually have been a change management specialist in my previous work hospital, where I worked with health record transitions, I worked with leadership changes, and I've also received my MBA from UMass. So my goal is to speak the administrative language so that I can be there to help with process improvement, policy changes that will help our physicians decrease their workload, help them to be able to spend more time with the patient, less time on the technology. At the same time, you know, this will help them to create efficiency for high-quality care and also remove as many barriers as possible, both from a provider standpoint as well as from a patient/veteran standpoint.
Awesome. And Julie, in terms of adding to your team, how psyched are you to have the doctor, you know, playing this role?
This has been a great addition. You know, Basava really hit the ground running. We've had so many things going on. We're really busy this season. We've had her at all of our events. This week is National Patient Experience Week, and so we're really out there thanking our veterans for choosing us and encouraging them to take a moment and share with us their, you know, their favorite stories of the VA Manchester. And she's getting ready with the rest of our leadership team to get ready to celebrate Nurses Week next week. So it's been fabulous to have you so far, Dr. Valvanini.
Thank you, Julie.
And any final thoughts, Doctor? And I was going to ask you both. You mentioned nursing there quickly, Julie. I know that a year or two ago, all New Hampshire healthcare facilities, practices were really hungry for more nursing and support-type medical folks. How are you doing on the nursing front? You mentioned Nursing Week. And how are we doing as a state? I know the governor's talked about it on my show, trying to recruit more. I know Tom Raffio's talked about it. How are you doing there? And then maybe a final word from the doctor.
We're really in a great place with nursing. Our vacancy rates are pretty low, lower than the industry standard for sure. And we've put a lot of efforts into retaining our high quality nurses over the years and really building relationships and having those conversations with our nurses to ensure that, you know, we can support them to stay in the VA, grow in their positions and work to the highest licensure authority that they have.
And I can finish up saying that, you know, this is a great and also unique opportunity for me here as a deputy chief of staff. It's a great place to work. We have very talented physicians, and we also have very invested executive leadership here along with growth opportunities to expand. All in all, I feel like, you know, this is probably the right match for me to work, and it's an honor, actually, to come and take care of our veterans here who served us. So thank you again for having me on the show.
Again, great stuff, Doctor, and I wish you the best. And Julie Vos, the acting director, thank you both very much. And when's Nursing Week, Julie?
Next week.
All right, next week. All right, we appreciate the nurses. Thank you very much, both, and enjoy your Wednesday. I almost said Tuesday. The week is moving. I'm still trying to get over the Bruins losing that in overtime last night to the Maple Leafs. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack. Bye.
Right. Alicia Preston-Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online. I have no idea what she's cooking up, but the written and spoken word, she's one of the best. Good morning, APX.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
You always ask, and you really don't care.
I care deeply.
But you never show that. You never even call offline, send a little like Thanksgiving note, nothing. Not a word. It's all about you.
At least I ask. So is there anybody that ever asks you how you're doing?
Every morning I come in, J-Dog will say, how you doing?
Yeah,
definitely don't do that.
Hey, did you know there are professional instructors to be an agitator? Did you know there's professionals out there that make a living like telling these students how to take over dorms and take over, make demands, tell the university what to do, get the president fired? Professional protesters, is that becoming a major in college?
Well, it should be, right? I mean, everything else is. Eric Adams, mayor of New York City, in a press conference just a little bit ago, said that. And I love that it's excusing the moronic students who, even if that's true, are following along like sheep.
Yeah. Well, hey, you got a kid. Save yourself some money. Don't send her to Columbia. I'm just telling you that.
You know what stinks, though? So she's far away in her freshman year in college, and so she calls me or FaceTimes me on the way back from class. And she shows me they've got their little encampment protesters, too. But they were a little late to the game. And so they were only up for like a day. And I said, you know what? Go back to your dorm and just order takeout. Don't bother walking down to the cafeteria tonight. Some of these things are turning ugly. And she's like, okay, I'll just stay in my dorm. I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to tell someone to, you know, I'm not sure if you're safe on the campus that you're paying to go to. So stay in your dorm for your own safety. That's nonsense. But kudos to her school. They didn't even give it 24 hours. They said, you've got till 10 o'clock to leave or you're all getting arrested. And they were, and they cleared it out. Unlike Columbia, who negotiated or whatever nonsense they did. her school just said, out, peace out, leave.
Well, you know what? Look, if this is being done at Columbia University, the police going in to take over, you know that this thing is reaching the stupid point. But tonight at Dartmouth College, I don't know if you know this, in Hanover, the first New Hampshire college campus where there's going to be a pretty good size encampment put in tonight by some people who are allegedly protesting, pro-Palestinian protest and peace in Gaza Strip, but it's outright anti-Israel. Anyway.
I'm willing to bet I could write a test, 5 questions, at a fourth grade level.
Yeah.
About what's going on between the Israelis and Palestinians, and 99.9% of these elite students would fail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's absolutely no question. Fail. I've seen video of some of these agitators being interviewed. They don't know the first thing about what they're protesting, but it's really cool to protest. It's really cool to show up, take over the campus. They're having fun. Social media makes it worse, but you're right. You ask them about October 7th, the history. You ask them anything about World War II. They don't know what's going on. But you know what's sad? Neither do their professors.
No, they don't, and that they're the ones teaching our
or how about this one? How about this one, Alicia? But you know, you tend to be a more of a fan of history. You know, the 80th anniversary of D-Day is coming up.
Isn't that amazing?
And now, if you asked the students, do you know why America entered and went over D-Day and risked all those soldiers, you know, all the army folks that were gunned down trying to take the beaches to go fight Hitler? Do you know why they fought and why we fought in World War II for so many years against Adolf Hitler and the Nazis? Do you know one of the big reasons, not just taking over Europe, but do you know how many Jewish people were tortured, murdered, shot in, you know, pits and buried, medical experiments, incinerated? Do you know why we fought World War II before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor? Do you know why our GIs and Easy Company and the Airborne, we went over there and took on the Nazis? You know what they fought for? They would have no idea what you're talking about.
No. They might know not too bad. That would be about the extent of it.
And I got one more question to get you going. You said a very good point as a parent. It's sad that you have to tell your kid in college to stay in their dorm because it might not be safe out there in this environment. Essentially, you know, a mother or father, parent's concern. And I don't blame you. Why is it right? And I'd ask this of anyone in the squad or the progressives in the Democratic Party. I think it's regressive. Why is it okay in this day and age in 2024, when I reference World War II, is it okay for Jewish students to fear for their physical safety and well-being on college campuses and actually leave the college afraid that they're going to be hurt if they go to class? Why is that okay with you?
And that's why, particularly at Columbia, which is kind of like the ground central of this nonsense, the administration there who decided to negotiate with the people who were using anti-Semitic slurs and calling for death to Jews and all that should be fired for even entertaining a discussion with students that were treating other students.
I agree with you 400%. I do. But you know what, Alicia, ironically, and I'm not saying you've been around my show a while, but you have, and you've been a great guest host, and you do great stuff, Seacoast Online. But regular listeners, and I appreciate it very much, may not, but I think they will, yours truly has been talking about Columbia University as ground zero for a lot of this stuff for years, long before the last few weeks or month. For years, I've been pointing out the anti-American sentiment, the anti-West, outright anti-U.S., anti-American sentiment that's been flourishing at Columbia University. I've been talking about the young woman from North Korea who defected with her father and family to get to come into New York legally to become a student. And she said that the anti-Western, anti-American, anti-U.S. teaching and actions in the classroom of Columbia University's professors years ago was worse than her teachers in North Korea that hated America, North Korea. And I've been talking about this for years, how Columbia is just off the rack, off the rails of anti-American, let alone anti-Israel.
You have, and it's true. And look, what's going on now is anti-American, and it's anti-authority, and it's anti-police. And I heard you praise the police earlier before I got on, and I totally agree with you. And there's a lot of reasons I shouldn't be a police officer. One is, if a kid threw a garbage can at me, I'm throwing it back twice as hard. But they didn't. They had such restraint, and they were so professional, and we should all be very proud of them. But this generation is raised not to be proud of our members of law enforcement. It's to see them as the enemy.
Yeah.
And so they hate America. They hate law enforcement. They hate authority. And that's what this is about. They don't know what the hell's going, pardon my language, on over in Israel and
Bingo.
Gaza. They don't know.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. You just won the, the triple, the trifecta in Vegas at the casino. What you just said, you just hit the nails right on the head. And you know what? I'm sorry. There's not a person listening, and I respect everyone listening and their points of view, which are different than mine, or maybe, that can disagree with one thing Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos just said. What you just said in the last 2 minutes about these students and their professors being anti-American, anti-this country, you know, anti-military, we have our faults and flaws. We all do. But the anti-American hatred, the American hatred that we are seeing in these college campuses for young people is really brainwashing them to the point that they don't like this country. And why would they want to serve it? Why would one of these students from Columbia want to join the National Guard or join the police or firefighters if they don't like this country? Why would they want to do that?
Well, and we're going to see that they don't unless they somehow grow up because they're forced to. I mean, look at how idiotic this is. Did you see the press gaggle with one of the kids, she's a PhD student, one of the students yesterday outside Hamilton Hall who held the press gaggle outside of Hamilton Hall because she demanded that Columbia provide food for the students that had taken the building.
Yeah.
And she actually said, I'm just saying, for the kids that have paid for a meal plan. And I'm going, okay, it's funny. And I laughed at it and I shared it on social media. But at the end of the day, it's not funny.
You know what
this is a PhD student at Columbia. This is the next generation to run this country.
Don't think they're smart. I mean, just because they're at an Ivy League school getting a degree, don't assume they're intelligent. But Alicia, it reminds me of, I'm trying to think of there have been a couple great movies on Netflix about bank robberies and the standoff and the negotiations and how the bank robbers who've robbed the bank and holding hostages and start demanding pizza, water, planes, All right, well, thank you, Alicia. Seacoast Online, thank you.
Have a great day, Jack, because I do care if you do.
I appreciate it, buddy.
Good Morning, New Hampshire with Jack Heath. Voted best radio talk show, thanks to you, in New Hampshire Magazine's 2024 Reader's Poll. Good Morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, welcome back, and got a busy show shaping up this morning. And Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us as she does each morning. And Erin, I heard you earlier on Mike Pomp's on the news, the national news, doing a story, and it was a pretty interesting subject. But they're always interesting. Take it away, Erin.
Yes, today we're talking about fake job recruiters. Jack, this one upsets me so much. We report on them a lot, and really, frankly, they make me sick. I can't think of like a better word than gross to describe these scammers, because what they're going after now are recent college grads or soon-to-be college grads. They are creating very personalized and very bold frauds. They're using information that's available online to claim to be a school dean or a professor that the student knows. They say that they've been recommended for a job. Long story short, the scammers want the student to apply for the job. They then want to steal the college student's identity, their bank information. And here's the rub. Young people's relative inexperience in the job market and then their comfort transacting so much of their lives on the internet has made them better victims potentially, because they don't stop to ask, hey, is it weird that I'm doing this entire job interview by text or email or online chat? It is weird. It shouldn't be done that way. Also, they're so personalized, these scams. They're posing as big recruiting firms like Robert Half, like Kelly. They're showing up on Indeed, ZipRecruiter, LinkedIn, all of the job and networking sites. They're very hard to spot, and it breaks my heart where you have these young people who are excited about kicking off their career and entering grown-up life, and they're becoming victims.
You know, Erin, it's interesting, Erin Rial, before I let you go, I have a nephew who had temporarily was living in Texas in a big city looking for work after college. Same story, and same thing happened. Thought it was legit. And you know what they'll do? They'll often say, forward us $50.
Yep.
For the interview, we'll facilitate, and you're in the running. And it was all bogus.
Oh, yeah. I feel terrible for him.
But you know what the problem is? That younger folks, let's be honest, and I think it actually has a germane point to these college protests, the agitators, social media today, they're a generation totally of digital, social media. So all the things they do, whether it's their banking, and I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's good or bad, it's a reality of technology. Your kids, they won't go to the bank and deposit a check. Everything is on that phone. Airbnb, they won't call someone and say, hey, do you rent your place? Everything. So when it comes to looking for work, looking things up, ordering food, Grubhub, everything is on that phone.
Exactly. You know, they're tech native, yep. And I get it. It's just sad to see. They prey on your vulnerabilities, whether you're tech native or tech not. They're coming after you.
All right, Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio National Correspondent. Thank you. Brad Card, Card & Associates. Thanks for the patience, Brad. We ran a little long, but talking some congressional stuff today, one of our political analysts and all-stars. Before we do, people don't know this, J-Dog, and I think you might remember. Brad was head coach of the Georgetown men's hockey team. And I got to tell you, Brad, I know you, like me, were watching the overtime. Please tell me to calm down. Why am I getting a little nervous now with this game six going back to Toronto tomorrow night?
Why is it that the Bruins are horrible in overtime? I mean, it's horrible. Look, they played a horrible game the first two periods, first two and a half periods. They came on, they had at least four really good scoring opportunities in the third period, and they just couldn't put the puck in the net. I mean, Brad Marchand right in front of the net, and it was a funny bounce on the stick. So the bounces went against them last night. They had many chances to win that game, and let's face it, Swayman stood on his head. He played great. So it was a really,
He kept them in the game.
Punch.
You know what worries me, Brad, is they played last night without Matthews, and they beat the Bruins.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not crazy about the style of coaching for this team right now. I'm really not. And I think it comes down to coaching. They have mental lapses. And it seems like this team is only good when Brad Marchand plays exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And the last game Brad Marchand played great.
Yeah.
This game, he wasn't nearly the factor. And Pastrnak wasn't.
Yeah,
much
but sometimes the other guys make you look that way. I mean, in other words, let's face it. Without Matthews, the Maple Leafs played out of there. Well, they also knew they were on the brink of elimination. Might make you that little extra degree, make you go a little. Well, let's hope for the best tomorrow night. Because you know what, when I don't see a Coyle score, and when I don't see Pastrnak score, when you don't get a goal or two from Pasta. Don always has to be Brad. You know it's going to be a tough night. Brad, what's going on? First of all, I think you'd agree with me because, you have kids in college. And I got to tell you, I think the fact that Columbia University, the last one to really take, clean it up and say, okay, this is enough. This is no longer peaceful. They're breaking into this is not peaceful or fun anymore. But how about the professionalism of the New York City Police Department?
Yeah, look at
because you and I know, Brad, you and I know if there was one issue last night of something that went bad, they'd be vilifying the police.
Yeah, no question about it. And look, in Washington, D.C., George Washington University calls the police in Washington, D.C., and the mayor's office does not let them go to assist George Washington University clear their campus. I mean, it's outrageous. And we're seeing this type of stuff. These are political decisions being made. And I don't think people – look at these protesters. They're young and, in my opinion, stupid. And what they really need to do is take their foot off the gas a little bit and maybe think about – there are many women. How do you think women protesting over in Palestine or in Iran or most places over –
How about Tehran? How about Tehran?
Tehran. How is that going to work?
Yeah.
How is that going to go for them? And I don't think these people know what they're protesting. There are American citizens being held hostage. Why aren't they protesting for their freedom? It's outrageous.
When you talk about death, when you talk about death to Israel and pro Hamas, you've gone too far. You are promoting terrorism.
They are chanting, "We are Hamas."
Yeah.
Hamas
is a terrorist organization. The number one covenant, if these students read it, are the professors. But you know what, Brad? The professors are actually as much of the problem, is to obliterate Israel. Is that peace? Obliterate Israel? Is that peace?
Columbia should have, right from the get. You and I cannot walk onto a campus and put a tent down and start camping out. You can't do that. So why on earth did Columbia allow a little tent city to be erected on their campus?
Yeah.
They should have immediately taken those tents down. kick people out and put fire hoses on them.
They're lucky
you're going to get drenched.
They're lucky they had the professionalism.
I agree.
They're lucky they had the professionals of the police last night because it went too long, too far, and usually that doesn't end well. Hey, Brad, would you just ask something? If you and I went on a college campus and set up an encampment, you know they're doing it tonight at Dartmouth in Hanover, by the way, because it's cool. They feel like they've missed the dance, so it's cool. They're going to do it. What's that?
They don't even know what they're doing.
The kiddies at Dartmouth are going to do it tonight. It's so cool to protest and take over your university.
They're very smart kids. They're entitled kids, I hate to say it, and they're smart morons. Because it's a moronic act of what they're doing.
But Brad, real quickly, because I want you to end on the congressional, but we actually have some extra time, so I don't want to run. Brad Card, Card and Associates. I just got to go back to something you said, because I pointed out you mentioned Columbia University, because I've been talking about Columbia on my show for years, long before this stuff with anti-Israel and a bit about being anti-American. But Brad, how quickly would the Columbia administrators have cleared out an encampment if what the students were chanting and doing the encampment for, if their mission, Brad, was secure the border now, stop the illegal flow,
right.
Secure the border now, stop the illegal
right.
flow? How quickly would they have cleared them out?
They'd all be bombed off the campus. I mean, it's crazy.
Now, the other thing, though, is if you and I and some buddies, speaking of illegal immigration or southern border, if you and I don't know if you know this from law enforcement, I talked to a Marine who explained this to me. If you and I went the reverse way in Juarez, Mexico from El Paso, go to a local, watering hole, and sort of just went into the police department or city officials in Juarez and say, hey, we demand housing. We want daily allowances. We want to be put up in a hotel room, and we want a license and health insurance. Do you know how quickly you and I would be in jail?
Jack, it's insanity that we're allowed. Listen, we're not only letting people in that are, by definition, illegal, right? They're in this country, illegal, by definition. And so what do? We reward them. We're going to bring you in. We're going to bring you in metropolitan Boston. We're going to take over a hotel. We're going to set you up. Don't worry about paying anything. Don't worry about it. We're going to feed you. We're going to clothe you, and we're going to house you. It's insanity.
Yeah.
It's just insanity, and we're paying for it. When we don't have the money, we're running deficits as it is, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There is no reason on earth that Joe Biden should not be, in my opinion, demolishing President Trump because of all of President Trump's problems, especially with independent voters. But he is doing everything in his power to hand this election to Donald Trump. And I said it before, issue 1, 2, and 3, the Southwest border. His handling of the Southwest border has been so abhorrent that he's giving this election away. And it's all because he is stubborn. I know people in his administration that I've talked to that are just apoplectic about the fact that he's not taking any administrative action on the Southwest border. He wants to blame Republicans, and he's the guy who came in and overturned a whole bunch of executive orders that Donald mm-hmm. Trump had in place, mm-hmm. many of which were pretty effective.
Oh, Brad, but no national media has ever done a story on that. Marjorie Taylor Greene, even though Democrats want to keep Johnson in there, what end with this one?
Speaking of whack jobs, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's going after the speaker. She says she's going to file a motion to vacate the chair. And she wants to do this because now Democrats have been coming basically forward to their conference to say this has been a historically unproductive Congress, statistically speaking. The number of pieces of legislation that have been enacted into law, historically low. So we have a speaker who, in my opinion, has done a pretty good job. And I was never a big, huge fan of the speaker. But look, I think he's done a good job with a lousy set of cards in his hand.
Yeah.
He's kept the government open, which, by the way, when you're in the majority, you've got to govern. It's not good enough to be so ideological that you can't get your agenda through. And the agenda that Marjorie Taylor Greene is talking about, what she's doing, why she wants to move, it's her and two other people. That's what we got right now. We've got three people who want to change the whole federal government.
She's beyond huge Trump, right? And even Trump seems to be okay with Johnson as speaker. He's meeting with him. He's talking with him. Yeah.
And her logic is she wants to bring this motion to vacate forward because she wants Democrats. Think about what she's saying here. She wants Democrats to have to go home and justify in a primary why they voted to keep a conservative Christian speaker. Think of, so in other words, she's going to go home to her constituents and say why she's getting rid of a conservative Christian Speaker of the House.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, it's insanity.
Yeah.
And this is not going to end well for her. This is just causing turmoil. Republicans are trying to win the majority in the next Congress. And quite frankly, 6 months ago, I thought Republicans were going to be absolutely dead in their quest to keep the majority. Redistricting has turned out pretty good overall. Not great, but it's not as bad as it could have been across the country. Republicans, in my opinion, are poised to maintain the majority in the House. They have a very good chance to keep the majority, which I did not think was going to be the case 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you're given all the drama and everything bad that's happened and the unproductivity and all that kind of stuff, non-productivity, you have a chance to keep the Republican majority and win in this election. Donald Trump is going to do better than I thought he was going to do 6 months ago. And so why would you want to screw that up by playing this game where it's only three people? And should three people be able to decide who's Speaker of the House?
Mm.
I don't think so.
All right. Brad Carr, good stuff. Carr and Associates, what do you think tomorrow night? What do you think? Bruins ended?
They got to pull it together. Brad Marchand needs to get this team going, and he needs to step up. I mean, it is what it is. I think the team follows Marchand, and his game last night was not great. Pasta was not great, so they got to step up. Swayman was great.
Yeah.
Swayman
well,
played
he's
absolutely
been, yeah, he's
phenomenal.
Been playing,
well,
he reminds
he's
me,
playing,
yeah,
he's playing lights out. They deserve to win because of him, but they got to play a lot better than they did, especially the first.
They got to beat the Maple Leafs to win. They just can't stay in the game. All right, Brad Card, live.
Right,
thank
we'll
you, Brad. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Take it away, Rory.
Hey, Jack. Well, we are seeing police now take more actions on college campuses across the country. Madison, Wisconsin, getting a lot of attention this morning as well after police took some action on that campus to break up an encampment that has been growing in the past couple of days. It's been fascinating to see the different responses by police organizations and the different responses by the colleges and universities, oftentimes based on whether or not they are a public or a private institution, whether or not this is the end of this series of protests or just the beginning of something more serious, though, is still the unanswered question.
Well, Rory, I think social media makes it a tad worse. You and I have talked about it. But when I see Columbia University invite and ask the New York City Police Department and their tactical, Riot, and so many officers come in to basically restore law and order on their campus. When I see Columbia do that, I think the craziness might be subsiding because Columbia is the last place. Look how long they're waiting for the students to, you know, worrying about their feelings, reach agreement with the students. You know what I'm trying to say. I think Columbia, that's a good sign that this craziness might be subsiding.
Well, look, Brown University cut a deal to essentially have the trustees review their investments in Israel, and that was enough to get the encampment to break up. Northwestern, though, really gave in, paying for all the tuition for Palestinian students and paying for Palestinian faculty and, you know, a lot of concessions, maybe too many at Northwestern.
Yeah, chase the Jewish students off campus. All right, thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisors, one of our great partners out there, nonpartisan public affair, or partisan of a public affair, both sides covered, talking about some of the D.C. news, watching for the presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump. His VP dynamics and choices, we had Corey Lewandowski the other day on this, saying that they were looking for an outsider, but we're seeing some inside Washington names, including rising to the top of consideration, including Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. Take it away, Matthew.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Yeah, a lot of talk. One of the most interesting things that happened yesterday, not sure if you saw this, former president comes out of the courtroom and says, "I'm so mad about being here and being tied up. I should be on the campaign trail." He said, "I should be in Georgia." And then he said, "I should be in New Hampshire." Now, I think you've been one of the first to point it out. You know, no one is talking about New Hampshire except all of the candidates continue to pay attention. We've had Jill Biden, Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar was there, what, last weekend? Soon to be Senator Lisa Rochester. I think Doug Burgum, you had on the radio, he was in New Hampshire. Byron Donalds will be in New Hampshire later on. So it looks like we are a battleground. Both Trump and Biden continue to pay attention.
Hey, by the way, if that's true, Matthew, that's bad news for the Biden camp, because New Hampshire should be in the bag for Biden.
You know, 2016, I think we all remember, Donald Trump was supposed to get blown out in New Hampshire. 10 percentage points, lost by about 2,000 votes. So very close. And then I think 2020 was, what, 6 or maybe 8 points? 2020, Joe Biden. So, yeah, is this going to be an election closer to 2016 or 2020? Obviously, the people in New Hampshire are going to sort it all out. We will see. But what you did say is, yeah, a lot of talk, a lot of speculation about Donald Trump's vice presidential pick. Let's remember that, you know, most Americans, it's hard to say a vice presidential pick has either made or broke a ticket. But I would argue maybe this one could be a little more consequential than ever before for two reasons. One, just like Joe Biden, Donald Trump is old. And two, he is serving, you know, no matter who wins, we're going to have a lame duck presidency, 4 years of somebody who cannot run again. So Donald Trump's VP will either be the current vice president, maybe odds on favorite to be the next president, or would possibly have a head start in what could be a wide open Republican race in 2028. A lot of names. Corey floated Kristi Noem. Not sure if you saw, but she's been dealing with a bit of a headache about shooting a puppy. Never a good thing. Doug Burgum is certainly on the list. Ben Carson.
Yeah, well, hold on. I think the ones that Lewandowski talked about that were, I think Doug Burgum may be moving up, but I see if Trump gets elected, I think Burgum more energy secretary, not VP. But let me just stay with this for a minute on VP strategy, because Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisors, check them out, public affairs, both here and nationally and beyond. Matthew, so I've been a little bit of a student of this over the years, too. And sometimes we've seen chemistry as an important thing for that nominee to pick someone that he or she, you know, he wants to work with. But in the past, we've seen presidents be very realistic and pick someone they may not even care for because they need the South, or they need something, you know, they need Washington because they're an outsider. I mean, I go back to Kennedy and LBJ. Strange, you know, politics makes strange bedfellows. I think President Barack Obama needed sort of a senior member. Ironically, he's president now. Talk about senior, right? He's going on, you know, beyond 81. But he needed kind of that foreign relations, you know, sort of Senate, because, you know, President Obama was new to the scene. So he picked Biden. You know, I could go on and on and on. And I think sometimes choices are made right or wrong, and I agree with you. They don't normally dictate the outcome, because people vote for president, not the choice of VP. But when Donald Trump the first time picked Mike Pence, think about that. What was that about? Well, heartland, partly geography, Midwest, but a governor-tested conservative, because Trump didn't really have, a lot of people didn't know his political makeup. So Pence, one thing you can say about Pence, conservative. So this time around, Matthew, with all that backdrop, for Trump, it's usually about the marketing. Think about this. It's usually about the splash, the marketing. You know what I'm saying? It's usually about not the behind the scenes, who would be the best strategically long term to help us win this election, from what state, where are we weak, what states do we need. It's more about the marketing that Trump, and by the way, Trump will make the decision, no one else. He'll make the decision. I think you agree with me. So on those lines, give me your top three, your Matthew Bartlett predictions.
Yeah, listen, I think you nailed it, right? There's a lot of different factors that go into this. Do you get along with the person? Are you picking this person strategically to win? You know, the D.C. talk coming out of Mar-a-Lago is that Trump is asking everybody, and there are two things that are on his mind. One is abortion. He is very keen to the sensitivities around abortion. South Dakota, Kristi Noem, very stringent abortion laws. Tim Scott, you know, came out and ran for president. So he's looking to see who can, you know, talk around these issues well. And then there's also a notion, Doug Burgum, you said, Doug Burgum is a billionaire. Doug Burgum has a lot of money. If Doug Burgum joins the ticket, he can probably help fund the campaign. So, listen, right now, I would say people in D.C. are looking at, he likes Rubio, supposedly. Rubio lives in Florida, so there would be a constitutional issue of both vice president and president being from Florida. Rubio is reportedly saying, I'm willing to say I'm a resident of whatever, D.C. or Virginia, So that could placate that. Rubio is on the list. J.D. Vance, a young Ohio senator, kind of coming from the Tucker Carlson wing of the party, if you would, close to a guy named Peter Thiel, who's a billionaire, kind of libertarian, who has yet to open up his wallet this go-around for Trump. But he's Senator Vance is very close with Don Jr., and there's probably some simpatico in terms of the MAGA mindset. So Vance is on that list. There's scant talk, again, of Tim Scott being there, of Doug Burgum.
But if you had to say it's a fun guess game, who do you think he picks in the end? Let's just say, would he pick a female? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, again.
Representative from New York who did all the anti-Semitic grilling?
Right,
on
right.
A step,
yeah.
Up, step.
You have Elise Stefanik.
Yes, Stefanik.
She's supposedly highly polarizing. And the question is, you know, is he, you know, is someone from the House have the stature?
But you know,
that
with Trump,
wants?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is fun because the psychology. You know, with Trump, loyalty is going to be big. I want to pick someone. They know I'm the boss. And marketing and kind of public. One thing about Trump, he's got an amazing ability to take like all the court cases and then go and maximize the fact that, you know, sort of he's the victim, witch hunts. He knows how to take, you know, he knows how to make lemonade out of lemons. So who of this group, maybe we're missing someone, because there's even been rumors that, you know, he's sort of joked or quipped that, what about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but who makes the biggest splash and who would he like to work, you know, who would he like there that will be sort of, I don't like to say this, but second fiddle to him happily?
Exactly. Again, if the notion is, you know, what does the vice president bring you? It is hard to see that, you know, somebody was on the fence on Donald Trump, but J.D. Vance is somehow okay, seals the deal. Could be. Maybe in some of those rural Pennsylvania voters, he might have that appeal. There was a notion that Tim Scott does not carry the black vote with him. But what does Tim Scott do? It can make it much more palatable to say that, you know, what do suburbanites not want to be called racist? Well, if there's an African-American, a black vice presidential pick, kind of insulates you from some of the accusations of racism. So could he be helpful in terms of, you know, bringing some of those suburban voters that may have been disaffected? Right now, I do think Rubio's up there. I do think that J.D. Vance is real. And then I'd put, you know, Doug Burgum and Tim Scott tied for third.
Here's another question. When does he make the announcement? Does it go into like June or when?
If we know anything about the president, he is a showman and loves it and loves the entertainment, loves dangling. We'll say, I'll let you know in a week. A week goes by, he goes, I'll let you know in another week. I think we're going to really hold up, you know, probably till the convention is my guess. He did a big confab with all of these. It's almost like The Apprentice, contenders going down to Mar-a-Lago. You know, some of them, I'm sure, are on TV making compelling cases. Some of them maybe pandering. But, yeah, it's going to be a consequential pick, again, because it could be the next vice president, could be, right, you know, president 4 years from now, or could be a head start in terms of, you know, the future of the party.
All right, Matthew Bartlett, always good stuff. Darby Field Advisors, make it a great Wednesday. Thank you, Matthew.
Live free or die. See you, Jack.
Welcome back, Maggie Pritchard. And Maggie is with, of course, one of the great leaders at the Lakes Region Community Mental Health Center. And mental health is something we like to talk about here on the show because I believe it's the number one health issue and problem and challenge that every one of our listeners and every family deal with at some level. And, of course, it leads to other things, and yet we don't talk about it enough. And I always love the updates. Maggie, good morning on this Wednesday. Welcome to May. How are you?
I'm good, and I love May because May is Mental Health Month.
Yeah, you know what? I hope we get some attention on that because it continues to be a much bigger problem for more people than people want to realize. Anxiety, depression, number one health challenge for younger people under 40 is what we're talking about, let alone seniors and older people. More people than not are dealing with some degree of depression, some degree of mental health, and we don't really make it a priority enough. Not saying you, it's been your life and your career. Take it away this month. What do you have going on there?
Well, this month, because I'm the president of the Association of All the Mental Health Centers, there is a website called CBHA, Community Behavioral Health Association. And if people go there, they can see lots and lots of activities in the month of May that each center around the state is hosting. Nashua has a walk. Riverbend is showing a movie that Bodie, our skier,
Bodie Miller.
Produced.
Yep, Bodie Miller.
Yeah, Bodie Miller did. about the mental health of athletes and the challenges that they have. And then we have an art auction in May. We have a challenge walk, 28.2 miles. We have all kinds of Wear Green on May 17th. It's Wear Green and Jeans for Mental Health, because green's the mental health color. So if you go to cbha.org, you can find activities throughout the month, and I hope that the listeners will take advantage of some of these activities to inform themselves more of what's available, as well as what the challenges are for people, so that they might be able to better help someone they love.
Yeah, that's fat. That's good stuff. And Bodhi is a very interesting person and personality, so good for him. Yeah, what about what are you finding in your services? Your therapist, your staff, what are they, you know, this is what I'm hearing, Maggie, because 2 weeks from today we have my 10th annual Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count, part of Easter Seals, but homelessness, the affordable housing crisis is really taking its bite in terms of rents. A lot of people just not being able to afford a home, an apartment. That can lead to a lot of pressures, a lot of anxiety, a lot of issues. And then, of course, I'm hearing we still have, you know, in some respects, too much addiction out there, and just the daily divisiveness and stress of life. Inflation's still high. A lot of people feel they're not able to keep up with their life. I interviewed a veteran the other day named Scott who needed some support and a hand up from Veterans Count. And one of his big things was he just couldn't afford a place to live. And he didn't even realize he was homeless because he was living out of a vehicle. And it caused a lot of depression, because he felt not successful, no feeling of accomplishment because he couldn't afford a place to live. So what are you finding in the field with your clients and folks that you help?
So I think that when you add to the fact that there are people who suffer from depression and then lose their housing, lose their job, lose their transportation because they can't afford to keep up either with car payments or with repairs, that you're just compounding their depression, so that we're seeing more and more people needing emergency care or feeling desperate, if you will. Spring is a really difficult time for people. I'm never quite sure when I worked emergency services why there would be such a spike in the springtime, because you would think that people would be elated to see grass growing and, you know, new buds on trees and things like that, when in actuality it's a very difficult time for people. There's high expectations for, let's say, kids going to prom, what have you. There's lots of things in the world in the springtime that call people to be challenged and make them really sad, right? They don't have a father to walk them down the aisle for the June wedding, what have you. There's just many things that happen in the spring that call to mind our losses and tend to sometimes increase depression.
Yeah, social media can make it worse. Maggie Pritchard, Lakes Region Community Mental Health Center. And I want, before we let you go, I want you to talk about best ways people can contact you, how someone knows if they're eligible for, you know, some support and help there. But again, talking with veterans just for a moment, because I'm trying to raise awareness 2 weeks from now. But one of the other things I hear about is sometimes they're just not aware of services and support out there. So they turn inward. Veterans aren't really good at putting their hand up. So then the other thing with veterans, I'm not saying that's what you deal with, but I'm sure you see it. They always feel that someone else needs the help more than them. You know, someone's got it worse off. But what do you say to people that are struggling and they're very reluctant to seek help?
I say what a very wise doctor said to me once is, if you don't take care of yourself, then what you feel or think about other people getting help won't come to fruition. Because if you don't start with you, how can you possibly put a hand out to another veteran?
Right.
How can you help each other if you haven't taken care of yourself first?
Right.
And you're right. That's a big challenge for people to be able to ask for help. And it's really not asking for help. I want people to understand. It's really about just taking care of yourself. It's like having your oil changed, right?
Yep.
You just got to do it.
Well, and again, if you're a parent, a caregiver, a partner, a spouse, and you're struggling, how can you be upbeat and supportive and there for those in your life if you're struggling? And I really do worry, because I think this problem, I know it, I don't think, strike that word, and you know that because you were part of our mental health and addiction forum at the Capital Center for the Arts. I really just think that, I'll give you an example. Can I, you know what, yeah, I can. I'm trying to think. I'm not betraying HIPAA or any rules. Again, on the military front, I was talking to a dad. This is a true story about a week ago, someone close to me, and he's a CEO of a business here in New Hampshire. And his daughter was going to school out of state, junior, had to come home unexpectedly a week or two ago Friday. She was suffering from just too much anxiety, depression, and just too much stress, really. And the folks there were just, they don't have enough support staff on that side, and they just suggested she take a break, you know, kind of like you've heard this term, a mental health break. So she went home, very down, very lost. And mom and dad are trying to deal with this in the family in the best supportive way and get her the support and the help. But first thing was just to get home and rest and then open up and talk. And what he explained to me was, for whatever reason, she was really struggling more than they knew. Like, really bad. And they didn't really know it, you know? And then the other thing, too, is she harbored, for whatever reason, some resentment to her parents, even though it was a great family from what I know, but I don't live there. You know what I mean? None of us know what was going on next door. But she just felt like they never understood her or supported her. And then he said something interesting to me. I said, how are you doing? He goes, I'm a mess. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I'm now going to see a therapist because I'm battling depression over this and other things. I didn't realize the stress it was taking on me as a dad and a parent. And it just started, it's been going on for a couple of years, and I realized I have some issues I have to address, or how can I be good to my daughter and my family? I thought that was a profound statement, which goes to your point.
Yeah. I mean, if you aren't checking in with your kids and having very direct, open conversations, we can never assume what's going to help them, right? If somebody told me, Maggie, you got to take a week off of work, I'd probably have a nervous breakdown just thinking about it. But, you know, that's not what helps me. What helps me is somebody asking me, what will help you? You seem to be struggling a little bit here.
Well, what about the reversal, the shoe on the other foot, Maggie? What about if kids are doing better than parents or someone who, like a grandparent? Let's just say, for example, your kids or your grandkids or whatever are getting on, they're out of school, they're working, let's hope, they've fallen the nest, as they say. Let's just say that they're getting on with their life, and they're doing quite well. They're doing well overall. But what if mom and dad aren't? What if they're quietly harboring some mental health issues that no one's talking about? Who checks in on them? Or that person who's living alone, battling depression, who checks in on them?
Right. I mean, I think it is, Republicans will love this, I do think it's a little bit about personal responsibility, right? Understanding yourself and recognizing in yourself what's going on and knowing enough to speak up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, God knows parents are out there saying, I don't want to be a burden to my children.
Yeah.
Well, don't assume you're a burden to them. Assume it's a burden,
right,
you not talking to them and telling them that you're struggling, because that's worse.
You know, the other thing I found, Maggie Pritchard, is that sometimes the person who seems the most put together, the most comical, the most carefree, inside might be quaking, like struggling. And they don't show it because they just, you know, whatever. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, it used to be, not to knock all healthcare, because you're a bright light. Seriously, you individually and your story and your center. But, you know, our healthcare, don't get me going, our system, but, you know, you go to your doctor or you go to that physician and they're quick to prescribe medication if you need it, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol. But the appointment doesn't always begin like, you know, I'm sorry, we have time. Can you indulge me for a minute?
Yeah, I can.
Jack Harper was a journalist I worked with way back at Channel 5, and he taught me one. He was a great reporter, I think one of the best I've ever seen in the field. And he always used to tell me, Jack, your best stories are the human stories of one person, because they're the ones that are real. So this is a story of one person. She's close to me. She was going to her physical. You know how everyone this time of year is getting their blood drawn, you know, your insurance, your physicals.
Mm-hmm.
Spring, here we are, May, mental health. But is there a physical for mental health? That's a good question. So everyone's getting their physicals, and she showed me the form before she went to the doctor's office. And this is a person in their, you know, middle age. And it was these questions that I think might be coming from the CDC that have nothing to do with her physical health. It was almost like a survey to learn about everything from income levels to housing. It was just weird. And I'm looking at this going, what has this got to do with your cholesterol? You know, you're going in there to check your body. And they're asking, well, not like if you thought about harming yourself. That's a good question to ask because, you know, so, you know, a lot of times, or how much do you smoke, or how many alcoholic drinks do you have a day? That's not what I'm talking about. The questions were more like a survey of society. It was weird. Housing, how much you pay a month in rent. Anyway, but the problem is when you go to your doctor today, your primary care physician, and your head is connected to your body. They're good at prescribing, you know, if you have tendonitis or you need to see a therapist or you have a high read on a blood count or something. But they don't start off with saying, hey, Maggie, thanks for coming in. How are you doing overall? What's going on in your life? Just talk to me. Because someone may say, yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, they rush through the answer. Yeah, I'm struggling with it. Well, excuse me. You just said you're. Have you ever thought about talking to someone about that? They don't do that. It's just immediately to the, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, it's because we're all on the clock, right? So it is, how can I get this patient in and out of my office as fast as possible because I have somebody else to see?
Well, that's
right?
too bad.
I only
bad.
Have 15 minutes allocated to my time.
But
used
that's
to be
too
you
bad.
Go in the doctor and spend an hour with the doctor.
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Exactly. No. It used to be allow an hour for your appointment. Your physical.
Yeah.
Like they would
yeah.
talk to you saying, Maggie, what do you do for the center again? Oh yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Do you have kids, grandkids, and that? Great. Okay, let's talk about your. Let me look at your ears. Let me let's talk about your breathing. All right, listen.
Yeah.
May mental health. And by the way, number one cause, and you know this, of death of people under 40 in America, according to the DEA. And I'm not saying it's mental health related; it's a drug overdose. So because too often people get addicted trying to self medicate. Mental health May. Lakes Region Community Mental Health Center, what's going on? Website, how can people learn more? Who's eligible? Tell us that.
All right. Encouraging everyone, go to lrmhc.org if you're in the Lakes Region, to look at our website where you can find out how to apply for services, what kind of services we offer, as well as all of the activities that we're doing in the month of May to raise awareness. And then alternatively, if you don't live in the Lakes Region and you want to go to CBHA, Community Behavioral Health Association.org, you will find all the activities in the month of May throughout the state that bring awareness to mental health issues.
All right, Maggie, you're the best. Thank you again, raising awareness in May. Thank you, Maggie.
Thanks, Jack. Bye.